Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
This week on The Big Show, Black Reel Award nominated television and film director and screenwriter, producer, and actor Malcolm D. Lee will join us to talk about his latest film, Barbershop: The Next Cut. Also, former Ellen DJ Tony Okumbawa will also stop by to talk about starring in the lyrical love drama Echo Park. We'll also have entertainment news and reviews of the latest films, including Jungle Book and The Dark Horse, as well as a tribute to rapper lyricist Guru of Gangstar fame, all on episode 287 of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. Let's go.
Now let's start the show. Step out of the cold. We come from the cold. To the top of the globe. The piss and the hoes. The folks and the stones. Whoever you ride for, we back for some more. Get back to the show. You know.
Good afternoon and welcome to episode 287 of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. I am Film Gordon, also known as Tim Gordon. And today we have a really packed show today. Four movies that we're going to be reviewing today. And of course, we're talking Barbershop because we're going to talk about Malcolm D. Lee, which I'll talk about momentarily. But Barbershop, The Next Cut, Echo Park, the new film from Array Productions, which is Ava DuVernay's shingle, is also will be looked at and reviewed today. We also have The Jungle Book, which I think is a pretty good film. We'll talk about it a little later on, as well as what's the last movie? Oh, The Dark Horse, the New Zealand film. So we have four movie reviews today. In addition to that, as I said, the director of The Barbershop, Next Cut, Malcolm D. Lee, will stop by and talk about this latest film, and we will also talk with Tony Okumbawa. I'm going to have to keep saying that slow so I don't mess his brother's name up. He'll give us a call a little later on today. Echo Park, which is in theaters, kind of on a platform or limited basis tomorrow, so you want to hear that as well. And we will start today's show off by saying that we remember the life of Keith Elam, better known by his stage name Guru, who passed away 6 years ago on April 19, 2010. Now, Guru, an acronym for Gifted Unlimited Rhymes Universal, was a rapper, producer, and actor, best known as a member of hip-hop duo Gangstar, along with DJ Premier. Now, of course, Guru founded Gangstar back in 1986. But it wasn't until he hooked up with Preem several years later that the dynamic duo took off. In 1990, the group was signed to Chrysalis Records, offering them unlimited artistic license and major label distribution worldwide, a platform the group used to become one of the most influential hip-hop acts of the 1990s. Now, during their career, Gangstar helped pioneer the New York City hardcore hip-hop sound, and their entire catalog specifically Step in the Arena from 1990, Daily Operation 1992, Hard to Earn 1994, and Moment of Truth 1998 are well respected among underground rap fans and critics. AboutMe.com placed Guru on their list of the top 50 MCs of our time, while The Source ranked him number 30 on their list of the top 50 lyricists of all time, saying, "Guru dropped some of the most thoughtful rhymes on wax." We will salute this fallen hip-hop warrior throughout the entire show, listening to his rhymes during our commercial break. So, yes, we do remember the life of Guru from Gangstar. Amazing artists, love their songs, and we featured a lot of them here on the show. So coming up momentarily, hopefully, Wilson Morales from blackfilm.com will stop by to talk entertainment news with us today. So, yeah, it's about 5 after now, so if he doesn't call in, we will continue to move forward. But before we get to Wilson, I just wanted to talk about last night, and last night, for folks who are not sport fans or sports or specifically basketball fans, you can just stop listening. But the fact that the NBA had 2 showcase games on last night, which as a rule, I don't watch. I love my Washington Wizards because I live here in the district, so I watch them. But, you know, who could turn away from the last game, Kobe Bryant's 20-year career, as well as the Golden State Warriors going for the coveted 3 wins, which simultaneously happened in California at the same time last night. Just amazing drama, you know. Kobe Bryant's final game was amazing. The introduction with Magic Johnson showing a bunch of clips of players, past and present, who played with him. He played against an amazing, you know, you can't script it any better than that. And then for Bryant in his last game to go out and drop 60 last night on 50 shots was just amazing in itself. So that drama was going on last night. And that's not even counting what happened in Golden State when the Warriors simultaneously won their 73rd game, breaking the 95-96 Bulls record of 72 wins last night. So last night, if you were a basketball fan, you know, I know the cliche and it's overused. It just doesn't get any better than that. It really doesn't get any better than that. If you like basketball and you like star power and you like the team element, so to watch Kobe Bryant last night and to watch the Golden State Warriors last night, absolutely amazing. So that is my sports talk, which we don't do a lot of on the show because it's a film show, but hey, it shows you that, you know, I watch other stuff too. I'm just not all up in the film. Now, also, if you didn't listen to last week's show, we profiled and spotlighted Film Fest DC, which actually kicks off tonight with The Dressmaker here in DC. And the festival will run 11 days, so from tonight through the end of next Sunday. I've already seen several of the films at the festival, and I'm on tap to see 17 more over the next, 11 days. So films are what we do. I know I'm probably at about 105 so far this year. When I tell that to people look at me like I'm crazy. But, you know, you go to enough film festivals, man, you just watch a lot of movies. I mean, you're watching 25 movies at Sundance. If you're watching 20 movies at the New African Film Fest, if you're watching movies at Tribeca, you're watching movies at Film Fest DC, the L.A. Film Fest, Urban World, Martha's Vineyard Film Fest, you watch movies. That's essentially what we do. And it's a responsibility that I take very seriously because not only do I have friends who reach out to me incessantly wanting to know about, you know, whether they should invest time and or money on certain films, I also have strangers that walk up to us, and the credibility is really the issue. And I've said it before, and I will continue to say it again. Anybody can watch movies and tell you what they like or what they don't like. But I need somebody who really is very thoughtful and is able to articulate the why you don't like or the why you don't like something. A good example of what I didn't think was really constructive criticism or film criticism, I should say, happened recently when Batman vs. Superman, The Dawn of Justice came out. there were a lot of critics in this market, and I guess you could say the same thing across the country. There were many examples of critics who came up with reasons, and again, I guess those reasons were logical to them, but to say you didn't like certain aspect of a movie because two characters' mothers shared the same name and it didn't make any sense. I mean, that's a small thing, and, you know, yeah, I may be able to say, you know, I can agree with you, but this is not a reason to hate something or not a reason to severely dislike something because you pick out the smallest minute detail. Now, let's also flip the script and talk about a review I wrote within the last month for a movie called Meet the Blacks. Now, again, comedy is subjective. I talk about this a lot. There are certain people who I think are funny, but some of their films I don't think are funny. I mean, Melissa McCarthy I think is funny. I think she wasn't really that funny in her latest film, The Boss, but she really made me laugh a lot in Spy. But in Spy, she was surrounded by an ensemble cast, including Jason Statham, who I thought took a lot of the pressure off of her in that film. But in films like Tammy, Bridesmaid, I didn't really laugh a lot at Melissa McCarthy, and people look at me like I'm crazy. Amy Schumer, who I think is talented and funny, the first time I saw Trainwreck, it didn't resonate with me. Same thing with Meet the Blacks. I thought Meet the Blacks didn't sort of come together and work. I thought that a lot of it was sophomoric. I thought the D-level all-stars that were in there did nothing to enhance the story, appearing a scene here, a scene there. So, again, that's why I talk about film criticism. It's always very you have to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, I've been doing this now for close to 25 years, and I've watched, people guesstimate over 10,000 movies, and I've seen a lot of films, and I watch a lot of films because when I'm watching something new, it helps to inform my perspective on something I've either seen before, a plot device, how a story moves along, the cinematography, how the music plays, the chemistry between the two leads, if the director has done several films, what type of story are we, or what type of sensibility are we looking at from a different director or a producer, the type of work that is done. So there are a lot of different elements that go into what I think is credible film criticism versus people just saying, I ain't like that movie. Well, why? I don't know. I just didn't like it. Well, the people who think that way, your thinking is kind of limited, and you need to jump into the pool, watch some movies, read some books, listen to some music, listen to something that talks about story, study story structure, and that will help you do this job. So, I said all that to say that as it relates to reviewing movies and the criticism, you know, as we started at the beginning of all of this, that Batman versus Superman, The Dawn of Justice, and some of what I thought was undue folks being overly critical, you know, maybe you were looking for the wrong thing. Maybe your expectations are different. So we're going to take a break right now, and I'm going to come back on the other side. And please, the goodness, I do not want to mispronounce Tony Unkung Bauer, I think it's his name, and he's on the line right now. So I'm going to come back from break, and we will talk to him. New film, Echo Park. You guys, keep it where you got it. You are listening to The Big Show, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon, and we'll be right back.
It's you. Skills, top rank, point blank. like we vital. Spit flows, rip shows, peep to recital. Still, now, you feel it when we drop those hot beats, stop pose, killing shit, we got those. Still, it's the music that the street loves. Deep Thug is now repping this with deep love. Still, gangstar, dueling again, ruling again. Watch as we do it again. It's the true living with a youthful vengeance. And I'm a judge, laugh as your ass, give you a crucial sentence. You need at least 12 jewels to practice. You're too enthusiastic, male groupie bastard. Still trying to convince us some more. Presenting your roar, that's what you need a minister for. Again, it's the law, got you up against the wall. We the gulliest, fuck it, then it's us against y'all. Mic skills, tight drills, like I'm Michael Jill. Like when he rifle the film, it's how I cipher the ill. Slide off, kid, and let a grown man finesse it. We bold and impressive, that old eye manifest shit. Some new product from a known team. Niggas know me, and you can bet they know Preem. So here we go for your stereo, and you can tell that it's real when you hear me go,
skills,
top rank, point blank, we vital, spit flows, rip shows, peep the recital,
skills,
now, you feel it when we drop those hot beats, stop pose, killing shit, we got those
skills,
it's the music that the street loves, peace.
Yeah, but in the large scale of things, you're either happy or you're not, but I understand people can have rough times. You spend half an hour with a person. You ask yourself, am I happy? If the answer is yes, great. On to the next half hour, the next week, the next month, the next day. You keep asking yourself, am I happy? At least I do. And if the answer is yes enough time, that is love.
All right, and that voice you just heard was the gentleman who is on the phone. That is from Echo Park. Which was a film that was released, well, actually, it was, I guess it was released in 2014 on the festival circuit, well, but it was...
Yes.
Would that be accurate?
Yes, on the festival circuit, yes.
On the festival circuit, and it was picked up by Array, which is Ava DuVernay's shingle, back in February, and it will be released tomorrow. I would love to welcome to our show the star of that film, and it is and here we go again. Tony Openbauer.
There you go. You got it. What your listeners don't know is that I just gave you a lesson about that.
Yes, you did. Because I was like, please, God. I've been told like I needed a bell every time I mispronounce it. Go, and then you had a better suggestion, which put the heat on me. You was like, just give me a dollar every time you mispronounce it. Like, no.
Exactly. But now we've got through with the introduction of Tony Okunbowale, you can now just call me Tony.
All right, man. So I had an opportunity earlier this week to watch Echo Park, and I watched it a couple of times. And I just want to say, first of all, I think it is a wonderful and delightful story that is very intimate and simplistic, but also very well done. When you were initially approached about doing this, or talk to the audience and tell them, how did this project kind of come together for you?
Wow. Well, first of all, I want to say, I was listening to your podcast earlier when you were talking about, you know, really critically viewing films, because, you know, that's what film critics are supposed to do. They're supposed to critically view films.
Right.
And you were incredibly right, incredibly comprehensive on the breakdown of what goes into it all. And for you to see our film a couple of times and to come out with that, I'm incredibly honored and grateful and thankful that you saw what we were trying to accomplish. The film came to me based on a bunch of people I know in my life and situations that had happened. So, and all based in this neighborhood which I live in and which the director lives in. Called Echo Park, and it was based on that. And I reached out to a writer called Catalina Aguila Mastretta, who lives in the neighborhood as well, a little bit away. And we clicked, and she wrote a really amazing screenplay. And then I reached out to Amanda, who also lives in Echo Park, and she loved it and came on board and put her spin on it. And that's how the genesis of the sort of film came about.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about this film, man. And I'm not going to give it away. But the first thing that really jumped out at me was that, and again, as a film critic and as a person who's watched a lot of movies, and at some point aspires to make some, The type of story that I think you guys did, I think, was very effective on several levels. There was a lot of great messaging in there. That, you know, you had the issue of gentrification. You had the issue of, like the neighborhood being a character in the film. You know, there's a wonderful scene early in the movie when you and Mamie Gunner are kind of walking back to your apartment because she's buying this sofa from you. And you're speaking to everybody in the neighborhood, and she looked at you and went, you know, well, really? You know everybody here? so talk a little bit about the vibe of Echo Park as it relates to it being a character in the film as well.
Well, you know, that is very accurate, and you know, the truth of the matter is, in neighborhoods that I want to live in, I want it to be like that. My neighbor has my house keys. My other neighbor has my phone numbers. While we were shooting, while we were doing production, my neighbor two doors down has a restaurant. He catered one of the days for us, you know. So it is truly a community, and Echo Park is not unlike a lot of communities that have these sort of literally. What is a community? A community is people. They make up the community. So there's a neighborhood, and the community in the neighborhood is all these people who come together to support each other. And that truly is what we were trying to convey. And I also remember when I lived in Fort Greene in Brooklyn back in the day, there was that feeling there. I've spoken to friends of mine who lived in Oakland. That feeling was there. I've spoken to friends who live in parts of London. That feeling was there. So it's like we were just trying to convey the changing neighborhood, whereby this is what is there now, and with the changes of gentrification, do we lose that? And then we did it. We hopefully did it in a very subtle way, without sort of hitting you over the head with a big stick saying, hey, "Look at this."
Well, you know, the lumps on my head have gone down since I watched the film earlier this week. But you did not beat the audience over the head. I just kind of watched it a couple of times and just picked up on several things. And another thing that jumped out at me was, you know, in one of life's great ironies, Tony, you'll love this. I was literally watching, God, what is the name of the movie that Meryl Streep did with Mamie when she was a bad
Flash, Ricky and the Flash.
Yeah. I was watching Ricky and the Flash, and, you know, I said, okay, well, let me pick up and watch Echo Park. And I had no idea who was cast in this movie, so I went straight from watching Mamie Gunner in Ricky and the Flash to Mamie Gunner in Echo Park and was like, wow, that kind of freaky. But talk about working with this extraordinarily talented and I would say attractive woman, where I thought the chemistry between the two of you guys was really well developed. Am I seeing things, or off screen, you two just didn't talk to each other, you know, spat on each other?
No, I mean, Mamie's incredibly talented, and you know, she's been around for a little bit, and she's going to reach incredible heights. I have no doubt about that. She was incredibly generous working on the film, and you know, we were able to really communicate and, you know, have a good working relationship comes out on the camera, as well as a good relationship, period. And it comes out in the film. She came to the film through a friend of a friend, and a friend of the director's, that is, who ended up doing the wardrobe. And when we got her, it was a great find, and she was so generous throughout the whole process. And no, she's just really cool people. It was such a pleasure to do this with her.
Now, one of the other, you know, huge aspects of this film is we talk about love, right? And your character, if we're not giving anything away, is not long for Echo Park. She's coming out of a bad relationship, and you know, you two just kind of click. And so talk about that dynamic of, you know, when the timing is not actually right, like when two people find each other and the timing just might not be right.
That's so true. Story of my life, by the way.
I'm the
guy who's always meeting someone while I'm traveling through somewhere, or while I'm, you know, and that's a lot of my friends and a lot of people. You know, normally when you see a lot of these romantic films with romantic sort of streaks in them, or romantic, you know, or their romances, period, they all get tied up in a very nice, buttoned-up way. Boy meets girl, girl meets boy, they like each other, you know, they go for it full throttle, and what, you know what I mean? But it's never that easy. Well, at least for me, it's never been that black and white, so to speak, no pun intended. It, you know, there's always shades of gray, and I'm always like, oh, wow, if I could have, should have, if I turned left instead of right, if I'd gone up that street, you know, and we really wanted to show that. In this particular sort of story, we really wanted to show that timing and circumstance really sometimes is love enough? Is being into someone enough? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it never seems to be.
Never.
It never seems to be in a lot of the real situations when I'm talking to friends and loved ones, you know. And so we really wanted to show that aspect of it, and hopefully we did.
All right, we are online with Tony Okumbawa.
You got it.
You see, I had to do that twice. You know, I'm doing it twice. I cannot let you get out of here, man, without talking about your experience on the Ellen Show, man. And I know people who really, you know, you can tell people who really haven't watched your movie. Like, if they ask you one question about the movie, and then the rest of it is all Ellen. We didn't do
yes.
that, right?
Yes, you didn't. You didn't.
Thank you,
I'm proud of it, though.
Thank you. But I got to talk to you about that, man. Was it as much fun for you doing it as it was for us to watch?
It was. And you know what the thing about it is, and this is the God's honest truth, I always tell people, I had a job where I could play music, dance, and just laugh. Like, in rehearsals, they wouldn't tell me half of what's going to happen because I just laugh. I'm one of those guys that I have a real sort of big laugh. And so, you know, people seem to like it, and I'm just being myself. You know, you can, as an actor, you can play anger and like, oh no, play laughter. That's hard. I was never faking it or anything. It was always just truly me having fun, and that's what the show was like. It really was a lot of fun. You know, I got to meet some amazing people and do some amazing things. I mean, from going to the president's inauguration to, you know, covering award shows. It was an amazing, amazing ride. And I had fun. I had a lot of fun, and that's how it is.
Well, Tony, I feel like we've been cheated, man, because, you know, I didn't get you. I was trying to do something to get that laugh out of you. It just didn't work out for me today, man. So I'll have to can it, bring it back.
Well, Ava and Chilene and the guys at Array, they gave me a big laugh when they picked up the film, but a big joyous laugh. And, you know, what those girls are doing over there is amazing. They're really doing a great job, and You know, I'm just grateful to be part of the Array team, and, you know, hopefully, as you know, it will grow more and more, and people will come out and see the film.
So wait a minute, stop. Is Tulane sitting there right now as you're saying this?
I'm at home. Tulane's not.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, because I love both those ladies, but Tulane specifically, I'm like, really? Did she make you say that?
No, Tulane's not here. She is here. She's hiding somewhere.
Damn.
No.
She's listening, so I'm sure I'll get a phone call at some point later today. So one more time, man. Echo Park, which is a
Echo
film
Park.
That I'm going to review fully probably in a couple of more segments. A film I really enjoyed. I described it as a breezy, lyrical love drama that I thought you guys did an amazing job on. How many days shooting was it to make Echo Park?
We shot it pretty quickly. We shot it, I think, in a total of 16 days.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like that. I mean, and that's not a bad thing. It just felt like...
No. Amanda, our director, was really specific on what she wanted. And so with the aid of her and the crew we had, you know, Eric Hayes and Jason McCormick, and, you know, we got in there, really did what we had to do, did a couple of pickup days, and then we were off to the races. you know, editing and putting it out.
And you got a nice small performance where you probably had her in there maybe a day or two, but from Helen Slater. I thought that was pretty funny.
Oh my goodness! Yes, she was. You know, for people to, you know, I mean, it wasn't a ton of money, but for people to read the script and think, I want to be a part of this. You know, that was a really flattering experience. You know, so we really lucked out. You know, and there's Gail Harold and Maurice Comte and Ricky Rico. You know, everyone really chipped in.
All right, Tony. So I'm trying to tell people, man, you need to get out there and check out Echo Park in theaters. Do you have any idea of, like, the market? Is it platform, limited, what the release is going to be for this film?
Yeah, absolutely. It comes out in theaters tomorrow in New York and L.A. and selected cities. And then it goes to Netflix as well. So it goes to Netflix.
Oh, very nice.
So if you can't get out to the theaters, go to Netflix, and it should be there too.
Tony Okenbauer. Wow, I was going to say Bunga.
Oh, you almost missed it. I almost got a dollar from you. Almost got a dollar.
Thank you, sir, for your time today. Great job on this film, man. And you can always let me know when you want to come back on, man. You're always welcome, my brother.
You are so kind, and I'm really, really, really humbled and grateful that you were able to review the film for us. I really appreciate it.
Tony, thank you, man. And you enjoy the rest of your day, man, and continued success.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
We vital. Spit flows, rip shows, peak to recital. Skills, now, you feel it when we drop those. Hot beats, stop pose, killing shit, we got those. Skills, it's the music that the street loves. Deep thug is now repping this with deep love. Skills, gangstar, dueling again, ruling again. Watch as we do it again. It's the true living with a youthful vengeance. And I'm a judge, laugh as your ass, give you a crucial sentence. You need at least 12 jewels to practice. You're too enthusiastic, male groupie bastard. Still trying to convince us some more. Presenting your roar, that's what you need a minister for. Again, it's the law, got you up against the wall. We the gulliest, fuck it, then it's us against y'all. Mic skills, tight drills, like I'm Michael Jill. Like when he write for the film, it's how I cipher the ill. Slide off, kid, and let a grown man finesse it. We bold and impressive, that old eye manifest shit. Some new product from a known team. Niggas know me, and you can bet they know green. So here we go for your stereo, and you can tell that it's real when you hear me go, hear me go. Skills, top rank, point blank, we vital. Spit flows, rip shows, peep the recital. Skills, now, you feel it when we drop those. Hot beats, stop pose, killing shit, we got those. Skills, it's the music that the street loves.
What's going on, hungry black folks? Huh? Who wants some non-profit gangster grub? All right, slow food to save food salt. Every delicious piece of beef helps keep a bullet off the street.
I know that's right, because that who smoked your okra was popping on Fleek last time.
There you go,
did she just say Fleek? Don't just make up words, right? There's a whole dictionary full of words. There's a library down the street, Webster's dictionary. Go in there and flip through it. You won't see Fleek in there nowhere.
Great. Don't worry about that. I got some Don't Be So Mean greens in there for you today, too. You're going to love it. It's so good.
All right. And, of course, that is from Barbershop, The Next Cut, which opens in theaters tomorrow. Welcome back to our show. It is 32 minutes after the hour. And Wilson Morales from blackfilm.com is also one of our junket superstars who goes out and sits down and talks with many of these actors and directors that are featured on our show. He had an opportunity early this week to sit down with Malcolm D. Lee, who, as I've said at the top of the show, is a Black Reel Award nominated. You've seen some of his films, of course, if you've watched The Best Man and The Best Man Holiday. He's directed a bevy of really kind of like big-time films. And now he steps into the director's chair for Barbershop, The Next Cut. And here is his conversation with Wilson Morales.
Clock out here. It's 15 minutes, but we won't be that much. You have an ensemble, and I said this earlier. What was it you did not want to do with this movie that people were probably looking for?
I don't know what people are looking for. I mean, look, I wanted to make it culturally relevant. I wanted to make it funny. I didn't want anything silly, you know, happening. Like, you know, there's a whole thing in the first one with the whole ATM stealing thing that was a little bit like, whatever. The whole thing in the second one with the what I wanted was just to make it, you know, feel authentic and up to date, and again, funny, and again, it all comes down to tone for me, you know. And fortunately, the content was already there, you know, with the environment that was set, you know, with, you know, Chicago gang violence.
Yes.
And I always wanted to have this kind of, you know, foreboding danger that could invade upon the safe space of the barbershop. The neighborhood could, you know, invade that space. That, you know, the safe house, you know, so to speak. And I think we achieved that, you know, to a large degree, but still managed to keep the movie very funny.
It's funny, like, when the movie starts and you see Troy Garrity there, I'm like, oh, I didn't know he was coming back. You know, I was like, and everybody seems to be back, you know, and then you say to yourself, okay, how do they fit everybody in here, you know, like, and then the kids, they have their own storyline.
That's right.
You know, that's a whole different thing, which was like, oh, okay, you know, it's like, how do you weave it all in there and bring it all together, and obviously, you have to write it, they put it together, but then you have to put it, you know, it's the direction and the editing, you know, so like the editing is what makes the movie when you have this big of a cast.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, if I had written it, I'd probably have a better idea, you know, how the editing was going to go. Like, I think a lot of movies are made in the editing room, and I feel like, even with Best Man Holiday, it was like, you know, there were lots of great scenes that we had to take out of the movie just for the length of time and for story, and that was certainly the case here. But I felt like even more so because we had so much footage that and so many jokes that had to be told. But you know, even if as funny as stuff is on set, it doesn't always translate to the cut. And then it's like, okay, you got to figure out, okay, what's going to be funniest overall for the movie, you know? So there's a lot of things that yes, in that sense, I did feel it's one of the first movies that I've done where I felt like, okay, this is gonna get made in the editing room, you know. Not that I didn't know what I was doing, you know, on set, but I said, well, we're gonna gather a whole bunch of stuff, and you know, and then I'll figure it out.
How much do you let the actors ad lib, and then that makes the cut?
A lot, you know. I think that, you know, that's why you cast funny people. That's why you cast people like J.B. Smoove and Dion Cole and Lamorne Morris, you know, who are gonna come up, because the comedians, you know, they have a different way of, you know, approaching material. They'll take what's there and they'll make that funny, but they'll also riff on that. And I knew that was going to happen, and I encourage it because that's what, you know, having done a number of comedies, you, and with different kinds of comedians, you definitely want to give them the leeway to do it, because when they're performing, they're in the room, you know. They got to feel the room, and that's what informs what they're doing a lot of times. And that's best because it's fresh and it's in the moment, it's authentic and it's real.
Mm-hmm. Eve, I think, made her debut in the first Barbershop with the Boys, you know. And with this movie, you have Nicki Minaj, and like I said before, people are going to be seeing this and they're going to be like, all right, is this stunt casting, you know, they're going to give her a part, you know. How much did you work with her? In terms of, like, people want to say, oh, she went to school. Like, okay, just because you went to, you know, LaGuardia School, she, you know, no one's seen her act. You know, it's like, even though she's done the videos, you know, and you know, that's there, now you're she's on a different platform here. Now the question is this going to be a one-off for her, or is she going to, you know, can we see her do something else down the road that doesn't have anything to do with her persona?
You know, she's, you know, was in The Other Woman, you know, with Cameron Diaz. When I saw her do that, and I thought, you know, she was good. It's funny. When she first came out, I was like, I think I'd like to work with her. I think she can act. And it's not, you know, anything other than me seeing, you know, what she does and how creative she is to make me think that. And is it, you know, was it a little bit of stunt casting? I suppose. But when I read the part of Drea, I was like, oh my God, Nicki Minaj would be great for this. And honestly, once she was interested, nobody else even registered in my mind. I was like, it's got to be her.
Whose idea was her wardrobe? Was it
primarily hers?
You know, because people were like, why she got to wear a bra all the time?
No, a couple of times I had to tell her, like, Nicki, can we put you in a jacket or something? She's like, why do you put me in a jacket? I'm like, all right, you know, I wasn't going to fight her on that. I mean, it was, you know, there were some certain things that, you know, I wanted her to be a little bit more covered in. But that's Nikki, and that's how she felt that she was going to be and her character would be. Mm-hmm. And listen, there are, you know, girls out there who are like that.
In a barbershop?
Sexually provocative, you know, whatever. Like, that's just how they get down. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's just how they want to present themselves to the world. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, okay, you know, I'm not totally opposed to it.
Okay.
You know?
And, you know, the people obviously you worked with before, Regina's in here now. Is it old hat when you are directing people who know you and know your style of directing?
You know, when you talk about Regina, she's, you know, she's great regardless. She has no, like, you know, ego about things. I think that it's a different character. And she was, I think that overall, the whole cast was extremely respectful. I think they've seen my work in the past and they respect that. And so everyone very much trusted me, you know, whether, you know, I'd worked with them before or if I was working with them for the first time. So, you know, in like Cedric and Regina, are, you know, certainly we've done that, but I'd never been into it, done the barbershop movie before. So, you know, there had to be a lot of trust, you know, placed in me, you know, in order for me to do my job. And so I was very grateful that they all trusted me and, you know, to do my best work. So, you know, it's never old hat because every movie is a different challenge.
As a director, coming onto a set where you have not written a script and, you know, you're part of a team, you know, and you're somebody who's used to, well, you've had your balance of you've written your own stuff and you've directed other stuff.
Yeah.
What works best for you? You know, like when you're on a film like this where it's not a new film and, like you said, there are layers that have already been established.
Right.
You know, and you're coming in here. You know, and you're asked to bring your stuff. It's the same thing like, you know, Scary Movie 5. Even though people didn't see it, you know, you're coming out into a war to like, oh, something that's already in place. You know, what does that do for you? Like, you're like, even though you're being trusted upon, like, we're now handing the reins to you, bring it home.
You know, for me personally, like, I prefer to write and direct. Because I know that's the way I know I can bring it to its greatest fruition. When I haven't written something, I just need to work with the writers and get into the mindset of the writers and why you made this choice. What was the, you know, this is how I interpret it. Is this how you saw it? And, you know, and weave it in a way that makes the script, you know, a place that fits my vision of the movie. When it comes to Barbershop, you know, I thought the two previous movies were good. But I always wanted to put my own spin on it. I wanted to make it, you know, the best of the three. You know, it'll be up to the fans to decide if it is. I feel like, you know, we've had an opportunity to be the funniest of the three. We had a lot more funny people to work with, you know, than they did. You know, Cedric was, you know, pretty much the only go-to funny person that they had. We've got an abundance of them, you know, from Utkarsh to Lamorne to J.B. Smooth, Dion Cole, to Regina Hall. We've got lots of funny people that we can count on. And, of course, we still have Cedric, who is still the king.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he still gives you, like, you know, stuff that you don't think about, you know. So I felt very comfortable in the environment. You know, it's funny, too, but because Cedric in the beginning, when right before about the start, we did a whole cast dinner. And, he, you know, everybody's making toast and said it was like, now look here, all you newcomers, we got a good franchise here. We welcome aboard. Don't fuck it up, you know. And, you know, he wasn't talking to me directly, but I'm like, well, I heard him. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, we have to give the fans what they expect, but, you know, potentially elevate it. And with the script that was there, you know, he was dealing with gang violence in Chicago, and be really socially relevant as well as something that was going to be really funny, I thought I could do something and bring something to the table with it.
We seem to be coming across this common theme where everything old is new again, and, you know, this is a movie that's coming back 10-plus years afterwards. That's how they came up 10-plus years later. You know, why is it that Hollywood is now all of a sudden greenlighting films that the fans kind of wanted to see years ago?
I think because the time of timing, you know, I think it's like, you know, everyone's always doing remakes. They're not doing remakes, they're doing sequels. If they're not doing, you know, if they're not doing sequels, they're doing reinventions or rebooting. You know, there are things that have worked in the past. Like new franchises don't always occur. So when something works, they want to keep making money. So I get it. I mean, you know, yes, it was 10 plus years later for Best Man, but I always had it in the back of my head to do. And I think that, you know, and Bob Tidal will attest to it. Yeah, I mean, you know, because that was successful, they could revisit Barbershop, you know, 10 years later, 12 years later. And because of, you know, where Ice Cube is in his career, and, you know, people want to see him again, and he's been very successful for a very long time. So it's like, okay, with Straight Outta Compton and Ride Along, it was like, okay, this is good timing to do another Barbershop movie, and let's get the right team together to do that. And fortunately, Kenya and Tracy, you know, came up with a great script, and they were asking to be aboard, and I thought I could, like I said, I could bring something to the table.
What are you doing next, and will it be a Best Man 3?
I'm eyeing a number of projects, including Girls Trip, you know, with Will Packer.
What's Girls Trip?
Girls Trip is an ensemble comedy about 40 plus women who go on a trip and behave badly.
Okay.
R-rated, you know, bridesmaids hangover type of thing. So there's that possibility. There's also the possibility of, you know, a couple of things that I'm juggling. I'm starting to think about TV a little bit. And as far as Best Man is concerned, I hope sometime soon, but it's a scheduling thing right now. There's a desire on the studio's part to do it, the actor's part, my part. It's really more about because, you know, my actors are
right.
All in television shows.
Yeah.
It's hard to schedule, a Best Man movie. So we'll see what happens.
All right. We're good.
All right.
Damn, I see you getting that chop over there, girl.
Yes, I am.
How much you charge for them weaves?
Well, it depends. Because if you want to be basic ass, no, Destiny's Child Beyonce, that's going to cost you like $200. If you want to be like, you know, cater to you, Beyonce, that's going to cost you like $600. And if you want to be Beyonce featuring Jay-Z, boom, boom, that's going to cost you like stacks.
I can't believe y'all spending all that money on weaves anyway. I can't believe y'all put all that money on your heads and then don't be having the money for your rent.
Excuse you, this is how I pay my rent.
Exactly. Because with this hair and this booty, it's like walking around with a black Air Max. And I never get denied.
I bet you don't.
Break it, step into my zone, mad rhymes will stifle ya. Lines like rifles go blast when I kick some. A lot of rappers be like one-time wonders. Couldn't say a fly rhyme if there was one right under their noses. I hate those motherfucking poses, but I'm so real to them it's scary. And with my unique skills, nah, you can't compare me. And no, we don't make whack tracks. And all the suckers get pushed back when I'm keeping real facts. I represent, set up shit like a tech boy. You're paranoid cause you're a son like Elroy. And you'd be happy as hell to get a record deal. Maybe a soul you'd sell to have massive deal. Oh yes, I'm greater than all MCs. When I breathe, give me room, please. I be like fascinating when I be updating. Cutting off white kids, pulling their trump cards. I thump hard and make them say that I'm God. Be pretending they're hardcore. Never know the meaning of me. But I get props like a slogan, and no man could ever try to diss when I kicks my jam. Lyrically deaf and connecting, complete my record. No double checking.
All right, and welcome back to the show. It is 48 minutes after the hour, and I want to thank Malcolm D. Lee as well as Wilson Morales for that interview in our last segment. But as I said earlier in the show, we have four movies a day, and this is really a rarity. I normally try never to go over three, but I felt that we had to put that extra movie in today. Of course, we're going to be reviewing Barbershop, The Next Cut, The Dark Horse, The Jungle Book, and our first film, which we will lead off today, and that is Echo Park. And Echo Park is the story of two people coming together across cultural and economic racial boundaries. Of course, it's directed by celebrity filmmaker Amanda Marsalis. The film focuses on a brewing romance of opposites in an increasingly gentrified L.A. neighborhood of its title. It also stars Mamie Gummer, as well as Tony Okinbawa. Want to make sure I got it right. And here is a clip from Echo Park.
Why don't you have a girlfriend or something? I don't. It doesn't seem like there's anything that wrong with you.
I don't know. I just have a hard time in relationships.
Have you ever been in love?
I don't know. The longest relationship I had was a year.
You don't believe in it?
Is it something you believe in? Does it just happen? I mean, you're with someone. You either have a good time or you don't. You either want to touch them or you don't. And when they're not around, you either miss them or you don't.
I think it's more complicated than that. I think that you can be miserable with someone and not want to touch them and not miss them and still really love them.
All right, and of course that was the stars of the film, Tony as well as Mamie. And this story, as I said, directed by Amanda Marsalis, is a wonderfully intimate story that, while it focuses on the two lives of these characters, is more so a third character is the neighborhood itself that is portrayed in the title of the film. A wonderful performance by both of the two leads in the story of Gummer, who's in a relationship that is coming to an end and she is moving forward in her life. Similar things are happening in Tony's life as he is preparing to go back to Britain to live. The two of them kind of connect, find one another, have a romance, and she wants him to stay, and the question becomes, will he stay for love, put aside his interests, and stay with her, or will the draw of his homeland be too much? I liked a lot of this film. I really did. I mean, I love the storytelling. I love the script. I liked how relatable the story was. It felt like something that either I had been through or something that I possibly could go through. So the universal appeal of the story also worked really well. And who hasn't struggled in love at some point? Whether it's you trying to get away from somebody or you trying to be with somebody who's trying to get away from you. And I think that the screenplay does a really wonderful job of that. This is the 11th film that Ava DuVernay's company, Array, which is headed by Delaine Jones, has kind of put out there. And this feels like the sort of story that if Ava wouldn't distribute it, it would be the sort of film that back in the day she would have made. You know, if you think about Middle of Nowhere, I Will Follow. So it's a perfect fit with the banner that it's under. A wonderful story that reminds me of a song that I heard years ago that stuck with me, that timing is everything. And in this story, that's essentially the take-home message, that timing is everything. But the timing for you to get out and check it out is really wonderful. I would suggest seeing it on the big screen before it hits Netflix. I gave this movie a B. I really liked the chemistry between these two characters and thought that it came across very well. Echo Park, a movie you need to check out. Now, up next is a story of an extraordinary man is a brilliant New Zealand chess player who suffers from severe bipolar disorder. Now, despite that challenge that came his way, Genesis Hotini, I think that's the way his name is pronounced, pushed forward to find a purpose in life by passing on his knowledge of chess to his community in the amazing film The Dark Horse. And here is a clip from that film.
$1,000 for you can get a place of your own.
No. What about the ward, bro?
And tell the ward what you want him to know. As long as you respect what I'm asking, bro. Get on the door. Start your own life. I can't do anything more for you now, my brother.
When I was really sick, I'd see you. Back when we were little kids, you put your hand on my shoulder and you'd say, "We'll be all right, bro. Everything will be all right."
Now, this scene right here is the essence of this story, which I went in knowing nothing about and completely within 30 minutes became immersed in and was like, yeah, this is the winner right here. This film stars Clifford Curtis, who you may not recognize the name, but you've seen him before. And most notably, if you remember Training Day, he's the character that Denzel Washington dropped off Ethan Hawke to his house in the Hispanic neighborhood and just ditched him and left him and literally was about to kill Ethan Hawke until he discovered that Hawke saved his niece earlier that day. So Curtis has played in a lot of major American films with, you know, usually Latin American characters, but he returns back to his native tongue in this film because he's a New Zealand actor and he's portraying a New Zealand hero in this film. In this story of a man who is bipolar, but he is a chess-playing savant. He is a genius. And that scene that you guys heard was between him and his older brother, who actually got him out of the mental facility and gave him an address and a place to live and was putting him out at that point because he belongs to a motorcycle gang. And his son is 14 years old, and on his son's 15th birthday, he was going to initiate him into said gang. So the film, while it's a story, it's Jen's story, and it's about him kind of working with a group of children to teach them chess. What it ultimately becomes is a story of a battle for the soul of a young child between the father and his brother, who want to try to give the son the best opportunity, each in their own eyes, to prepare him for manhood. And in many respects, it reminded me a lot of, if you remember Platoon, Elias and, goodness gracious, Willem Dafoe and Tom Berenger warring for the soul of Charlie Sheen in Platoon. You know, there are some heartbreaking scenes in here. That, you know, is a part of his pre-initiation. He is beaten on, urinated on, and when the stories get back to Genesis, you know, even though he feels that, you know, his own life can be in danger trying to save his son, his overwhelming love to provide for his nephew just gives him the courage just to be the man that he needs to become. Film, which released back in 2014 in New Zealand, won all sorts of major awards and was described as the greatest piece of cinema to come out of New Zealand. It is really, really well done. Cliff Curtis gives a tour de force performance as Genesis Hotini. He is really, really good in this movie. And I gave this movie a B. I think The Dark Horse is a name for what they called him in New Zealand, and can also be described later in the year as what this film could be, a dark horse in the race. This is a really well-done film, Hats off to everybody in New Zealand who kind of put this story together. If you get an opportunity, go out and support the Dark Horse. Really, really strong story. All right. Up next is the live action film, which we've seen several times, the fantasy adventure, The Jungle Book. Of course, this film is directed by Jon Favreau and is based on Rudyard Kipling's collective work. This, of course, is a live-action CGI reimagining of Walt Disney's 1967 animated film of the same name. And, of course, it stars and introduces Neil Sethi as Mowgli and features the voices of Bill Murray, Ben Kingsley, Idris Elba, Lupita Nyong'o, Scarlett Johansson, Giancarlo Esposito, and Christopher Walken. And here is a clip from The Jungle Book.
I can't help but notice there's this strange odor today. What is it? This scent that I'm on. I almost think it was some kind of man cub.
Mowgli belongs to my pack, Shere Khan.
Mowgli? They've given it a name. When was it we came to adopt man into the jungle?
He's just a cub.
Does my face not remind you of what a grown man can do? Shift your hunting ground for a few years and everyone forgets how the law works. Well, let me remind you. A man cub becomes man, and man is forbidden!
All right, and of course, that was Shere Khan, or as we like to nickname him watching this film, Stringer Khan. Of course, Idris Elba as Shere Khan, the tiger in this film. And, you know, let me just say, going in, that I watched the trailer, and my initial impression was I didn't think much of this film. I saw the trailers and was like, you know, it could possibly be something that I might check out, but I'm probably not going to enjoy it. Man, this movie blew me away. I was surprised by the storytelling, about how the technology, which I've always remarked as it relates to the comic superhero films, that they're now able to be told in a certain way because the technology is caught up. Technology in this film is superb. Everything works. There's a very good match between the voice work of all the actors that I named earlier and the different characters that they portray. We see Mowgli or Mowgli's adventure as he is raised by a pack of wolves after we discovered that Shere Khan kills his father when he was a baby and now wants to end his life. And how the great voice work of people like Ben Kingsley as the Black Panther that protects him. Bill Murray, who plays the bear in the film, who kind of shepherds him, uses him initially, and then the two of them develop a friendship. His wolf mother, Akilah, played by Lupita Nyong'o. I think that was Akilah. And if I'm getting this wrong, you know, don't hold it against me, but she does play his mother in the film. And Giancarlo Esposito. No, I think Giancarlo Esposito is Akilah, who was the leader of the wolf pack, who meets his demise at some point during the film. But there is, you know, the technology of this film helps the storytelling out immensely. It is very well done, you know, and I can't stop talking about the fantastic voice work and how I think, again, I will repeat, how they match. A lot of the voices match the characters that each of the actors have to portray. It's a rousing adventure that's well told, not boring, keeps you immersed. The only thing I will say about this movie is that people had younger kids that they brought because they're thinking about the 1967 Jungle Book. This movie's a little intense. It's a little scary. And I would probably say that if you have a kid that's maybe 10 and over, it's probably a good thing to bring them. But if you have kids 10 and under, I mean, you know, it's up to you because there were several times that me as an adult jumped at some of the kind of riveting scenes or some of the heavy drama that goes on. But The Jungle Book is a winner. I mean, I can't. There's nothing else I can say. This is the third film that I think has been aimed at the youth. The two animated films, of course, Zootopia, and recently another film that came out this spring that skips my mind right now. But these films that are targeting young people are being very well done these days, and The Jungle Book is another one. I gave The Jungle Book a B+. Again, a film I really liked a lot. Wouldn't mind seeing again. Very, very good story. All right, and that brings us to our last film of the day. And that film, of course, is Barbershop, The Next Cut. 12 years after the last installment, the hottest spot in Chicago's South Side is in the spotlight once again, featuring stimulating social commentary and community activism in the emotional yet hilarious ensemble comedy Barbershop, The Next Cut. And here is a clip from that film.
You girls keep complaining about the chauvinistic talk in the shop, but y'all do the same thing in reverse. Each one of y'all want a super thug that can hold his own on the yard at the Cook County Jail, that's got 3 degrees from Harvard and making 6 figures. Meanwhile, you pass up corny dudes like Gerard every day.
Exactly. Don't no woman want no moist Duncan Hines ass dude like Gerard?
No.
Gerard's like boiled okra. He's just green, stringy, just completely unappetizing to the human palate.
Wow.
All right, so since we last saw the crew back in 2004, things have changed not just for members of the shop personally, but for the city as a whole. One of their own is now president of the United States, yet crime and unrest have become a major issue throughout the city. Now, in the center of it all, Calvin, played by Ice Cube, and the barbershop have been a constant staple in the community. But while there's uncertainty in the neighborhood, plenty of upheaval is also taking place in the shop. Long gone are the days of the boys' club, and the recession has brought the ladies from the beauty shop inside the previously all-male domain led by Calvin's partner and co-owner, Angie, Regina Hall, and her fellow stylist, the earthy Brimu, Margot Bingham, as well as sexy siren Drea, Nicki Minaj. Now, of course, it wouldn't be a barbershop if Eddie, Cedric the Entertainer, didn't have something to say, and he and his fellow barbers go on nonstop. Now, several new additions round out the action, including Richard, played by Common, One Stop, which is hilarious, played by, what is dude's name? I hate when that happens. J.B. Smooth. Sorry about that, J.B. He's fantastic in it, as well as Lamar Morris, who plays Gerard, the guy who's the corny brother they just referenced. And I got to give a special shout-out to the man who, for some reason, wasn't a barber but was always in the shop, Dion Cole, who was channeling the energy that he brought to Black-ish, and he took it from Black-ish and brought it to Barbershop. He was fantastic in this film. And, of course, the film kind of tells or expands on the stories of the first two. And in the first two movies where much of the action was centered specifically in the barbershop, with maybe a couple of scenes, like in the first one where we had an ATM being stolen, and they tried to crack the ATM, and in the second one, we see a little of life outside the barbershop. For the most part, 90% of the action in the first two films is centered in the shop. Well, all that changes in the third film, because what they've done is now, for the first time, we get a chance to go home to Calvin and see what's going on as he is a concerned father trying to keep his son on the straight and narrow as young people his age are dying all around the city. In another story, Richard, which is now married to Terry, which is Eve's character, have now got an adopted son, or she is now helping to raise Richard's son from another relationship. And both his son and Calvin's son are palling around and, you know, they're getting into all sorts of trouble, so there's a feeling that one is influencing the other, which brings tension to the relationship between Cube and Common. To round that out, you also have Drea, which is Nicki Minaj, who is being overly friendly with Rashard, much to Terry's chagrin. So you have all that going on, and then the idea comes that with, you know, some recent murders, that the shop organized a ceasefire. And through it all, you have Cedric the Entertainer's Eddie, who just has jokes on top of jokes on top of jokes, now with J.B. Smoove and as well as Deion Cole helping out. So to have three really funny comedians as a part of the comedy tremendously helps this story along. A couple of things about this film. One, Ice Cube has become quite the prolific producer. I mean, just, you know, no longer than like 2 or 3 months ago, he had Straight Outta Compton. He's had the Friday franchise. He's had the Are We There Yet franchise and now the Barbershop franchise. So Cube has done some amazing work. He is really solid in there. His acting has gotten tremendously better over 2 decades. And him, along with the 3 other rappers that are in the film, Common, Eve, and Nicki Minaj, all are really serviceable and do a very good job. It was also ironic that, you know, several months ago as well, Spike Lee came out with Chi-Raq, where he mined similar territory to what Malcolm is doing here, but where that sort of feels almost like a fantasy, and Spike trying to interject Brooklyn into Chicago, Malcolm's script worked much better. And the irony of it all is that one of Compton's finest in Ice Cube is almost like an honorary Chicagoan in this film, channeling it well. I mean, making us feel like he is a part of this community and that he is concerned for and he cares for this community. It was also ironic to see him and Common on screen together 2 decades after their real life beef, and how it shows that not only have they evolved as men, but hip-hop as an art form has evolved, that people can disagree and finally come back together. So Malcolm D. Lee's goal was to make this the best Barbershop, and I can clearly say that the next cut is definitely the best cut. I gave Barbershop next cut a B+, really, really strong film, very entertaining. The crowd loved it. I loved it. I thought it kind of took a lot of different issues and kind of condensed them down and blended it in very well. So great job for the folks at Barbershop. All right. So that wraps up episode 287 of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. And as I tell you guys in closing every week, please see something good at the movies. And to take us out today, as we were celebrating the life of Guru, is this final song, The Moment of Truth. Until next week, you guys enjoy your weekend. Enjoy.
They say it's lonely at the top, and whatever you do, you always gotta watch around you. Nobody's invincible, no plan is foolproof. We all must meet our moment of truth. The same shifty cats that you hang with and do your thing with could set you up and wet you up. Nigga, keep the language, it's universal. You play with fire, it may hurt you or burn you. Lessons are blessings you should learn through, let's face facts. Although MCs lace tracks, it doesn't mean behind the scenes there ain't no dirt to trace back. That goes for all of us, there ain't nobody to trust. It's like sabotage, it's got me ready to bust, but I can't jeopardize what I have done up to this point. So I'ma get more guys to help me run the whole joint. Cultivate, multiply, motivate, or else we'll die. You know I'll be the master of the who, what, where, and why. See, when you're shining, some chumps will wanna dull ya. Always selfish, jealous punks will wanna pull ya down, just like some shellfish in a bucket, cause they love it to see your ass squirm like a worm. But justice will receive what is coming to you. Everybody else is gonna get this too. I ain't no saint, therefore I cannot dispute that everyone must meet their moment of truth. Actions have reactions, don't be quick to judge. You may not know the hardships people don't speak of. It's best to step back and observe with coup, for we all must meet our moment of truth. Sometimes you gotta dig deep. When problems come near, don't fear. Things get severe for everybody, everywhere. Why do bad things happen to good people? Seems that life is just a...
This is the way it is.
Wait, yeah.
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.